Chapter 3. When Ransom came to his senses, he seemed to be in bed in a dark room. He had a pretty severe headache, and this, combined with a general lassitude, discouraged him at first from attempting to rise or to take stock of his surroundings. He noticed, drawing his hand across his forehead, that he was sweating freely, and this directed his attention to the fact that the room, if it was a room, was remarkably warm. Moving his arms to fling off the bedclothes, he touched a wall at the right side of the bed. It was not only warm, but hot. He moved his hand to and fro in the emptiness on the other side, and noticed that there the air was cooler. Apparently the heat was coming from the wall. He felt his face and found a bruise over the left eye. This recalled to his mind the struggle with Weston and Divine, and he instantly concluded that they had put him in an outhouse behind their furnace. At the same time he looked up and recognized the source of the dim light in which, without noticing it, he had all along been able to see the movements of his own hands. There was some kind of skylight immediately over his head, a square of night sky filled with stars. It seemed to Ransom that he had never looked out on such a frosty night. Pulsing with brightness as with some unbearable pain or pleasure, clustered in pathless and countless multitudes, dreamlike in clarity, blazing in perfect blackness, the stars seized all his attention, troubled him, excited him, and drew him up to a sitting position. At the same time they quickened the throb of his headache, and this reminded him that he had been drugged. He was just formulating to himself the theory that the stuff they had given him might have some effect on the pupil, and that this would explain the unnatural splendour and fullness of the sky, when a disturbance of silver light, almost a pale and miniature sunrise at one corner of the skylight, drew his eyes upward again. Some minutes later, the orb of the full moon was pushing its way into the field of vision. Ransom sat still and watched. He had never seen such a moon, so white, so blinding, and so large. Like a great football just outside the glass, he thought. And then, a moment later, no, it's bigger than that. By this time he was quite certain that something was seriously wrong with his eyes. No moon could possibly be the size of the thing he was seeing. The light of the huge moon, if it was a moon, had by now illuminated his surroundings almost as clearly as if it were day. It was a very strange room. The floor was so small that the bed and a table beside it occupied the whole width of it. The ceiling seemed to be nearly twice as wide, and the walls sloped outwards as they rose, so that Ransom had the impression of lying at the bottom of a deep and narrow wheelbarrow. This confirmed his belief that his sight was either temporarily or permanently injured. In other respects, however, he was recovering rapidly, and even beginning to feel an unnatural lightness of heart and a not disagreeable excitement. The heat was still oppressive, and he stripped off everything but his shirt and trousers before rising to explore. His rising was disastrous and raised graver apprehensions in his mind about the effects of being drugged. Although he had been conscious of no unusual muscular effort, he found himself leaping from the bed with an energy which brought his head into sharp contact with the skylight and flung him down again in a heap on the floor. He found himself on the other side against the wall, the wall that ought to have sloped outwards like the side of a wheelbarrow, according to his previous reconnaissance. But it didn't. He felt it and looked at it. It was unmistakably at right angles to the floor. More cautiously this time, he rose again to his feet. He felt an extraordinary lightness of body. It was with difficulty that he kept his feet on the floor. For the first time, a suspicion that he might be dead and already in the ghost life crossed his mind. He was trembling, but 100 mental habits forbade him to consider this possibility. Instead, he explored his prison. The result was beyond doubt. All the walls looked as if they sloped outwards, so as to make the room wider at the ceiling than it was at the floor. But each wall, as you stood beside it, turned out to be perfectly perpendicular, not only to sight, but to touch also, if one stooped down and examined with one's fingers the angle between it and the floor. The same examination revealed two other curious facts. The room was walled and floored with metal, and was in a state of continuous faint vibration, a silent vibration with a strangely lifelike and unmechanical quality about it. But if the vibration was silent, there was plenty of noise going on, a series of musical raps or percussions at quite irregular intervals, which seemed to come from the ceiling. It was as if the metal chamber in which he found himself was being bombarded with small, tinkling missiles. Ransom was by now thoroughly frightened, not with the prosaic fright that a man suffers in a war, but with a heady, bounding kind of fear that was hardly distinguishable from his general excitement. He was poised on a sort of emotional watershed from which, he felt, he might at any moment pass into delirious terror or into an ecstasy of joy. He knew now that he was not in a house, but in some moving vessel. It was clearly not a submarine, and the infinitesimal quivering of the metal did not suggest the motion of any wheeled vehicle. A ship, then, he supposed, or some kind of airship. But there was an oddity in all his sensations for which neither supposition accounted. Puzzled, he sat down again on the bed and stared at the portentous moon. An airship, some kind of flying machine. But why did the moon look so big? It was larger than he had thought at first. No moon could really be that size. And he realized now that he had known this from the first, but had repressed the knowledge through terror. At the same moment, a thought came into his head which stopped his breath. There could be no full moon at all that night. He remembered distinctly that he had walked from Naderby in a moonless night. Even if the thin crescent of a new moon had escaped his notice, it could not have grown to this in a few hours. It could not have grown to this at all, this megalomaniac disk, far larger than the football he had at first compared it to, larger than a child's hoop, filling almost half the sky. And where was the old man in the moon, the familiar face that had looked down on all the generations of men? The thing wasn't the moon at all. And he felt his hair move on his scalp. At that moment, the sound of an opening door made him turn his head. An oblong of dazzling light appeared behind him and instantly vanished as the door closed again, having admitted the bulky form of a naked man whom Ransom recognized as Weston. No reproach, no demand for an explanation rose to Ransom's lips or even to his mind, not with that monstrous orb above them. The mere presence of a human being, with its offer of at least some companionship, broke down the tension in which his nerves had long been resisting a bottomless dismay. He found, when he spoke, that he was sobbing. "Weston, Weston," he gasped, "what is it? It's not the moon, not that size. It can't be, can it?" "No," replied Weston. "It's the earth."